The Success in South Florida podcast is brought to you by the team at Rawson Law Firm. If you need DUI or criminal defense representation, call the Rawson Law Firm at 754-206-6200 or check the description of today's episode for more contact information. The Rawson Law Firm, helping good people when bad things happen so they can achieve their best futures.
Welcome to Success in South Florida, featuring interviews with entrepreneurs, leaders, and other movers and shakers across South Florida to find out how they're doing their part to enhance the local community. Your host is Adam Rawson, the founder and CEO of the Rawson Law Firm. Adam's an award-winning attorney, former prosecutor, and a lifelong South Florida resident. He became an attorney because he believes in helping those in need and in crafting lifelong relationships in the community. This podcast is an extension of that mission. Let's get to today's interview. Here's Adam Rawson.
Welcome back to another episode of Success in South Florida. I am your host, Adam Rawson, and on today's episode, we have Jennifer Weissman. Jennifer, how are you doing today?
I am excellent. Sunny Florida, I'm happy.
Awesome. Yeah, I know, right? Sunny all the time. It's great, except for maybe our, 7 months of perpetual summer where you go outside and you sweat like crazy. But no, I love it. I was born and raised here and there's no place I'd rather be. So,
we are forgetting about the unbelievable storms that we experience here in violent, crazy rain.
And only make it hotter when they're gone, right? Doesn't do anything.
Right. For the heat. Makes no sense at all.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's talk about you, right? Tell our audience, who you are and your journey of entrepreneurship and success.
So I came to South Florida a year ago. That would be August of 2022. And I moved here from the Middle East. And that sort of plays into the larger context of my background as an entrepreneur and as a risk taker. My husband and I decided about 5 years ago that our kids needed to have a bigger global life experience. We were living in Boulder, Colorado for many, many years. We loved it, but everybody was the same and looked the same, and they were all from similar backgrounds. So we decided we would pack our dog and our kids. Everybody got 2 duffel bags, and off we went to Tel Aviv for 1 year.
And how old were your kids at this time?
So my daughter was about 13. And my son was just turning 10.
Wow.
I think for kids, moving to a foreign country, A, complete culture shock, and B, they don't speak the language. It was really talk about resiliency, talk about throwing them into the fight, and they had to figure it out. Our 1 year away led us to continuing on for a second year and a third year, et cetera, et cetera. We ended up making Aliyah, which is citizenship. So we all became Israeli citizens. And we stayed for almost 5 years, a little over 4.5 years. Again, coming back to my background as an entrepreneur and a resilient person setting up big challenges. This is eventually, we decided it was time to come back to America, and we came back. Our family is all on the same continent. I tell this story because there are very few people, and I give my husband most of the credit here, who would pick up their comfortable life and pack up a couple duffel bags and their family and move to a foreign land and a place, not in Europe, a place in the Middle East that's considered dangerous, which that's very much debatable. And yet we did it. And I think that when I look back on my life, I started an advertising agency in New York City when I was about 30 years old. And that took some courage. But at the time, I didn't feel like I had anything to lose. It was just me. So I've always been fascinated with this idea of doing something hard, even sort of against the odds. And that kind of dovetails, my long story short, into the podcast that I started a few years ago called Going for Greatness. And it's really about how you build resiliency in your life and how significant life events, both in good events, happy, joyful events, and really sad, horribly tragic events, how they shape your life. And then it's up to you to decide how you take that forward. I'm sorry for the long answer, but there you go.
It's an amazing story, and I want to unpack it piece by piece. First question I have, though, is, how did you get your kids to actually go? Because if 13-year-old me would have been kicking and screaming, middle school me, right? You're 13, you know, middle school age daughter. I mean, middle school is hard enough. And then to move halfway across the world and, you know, 10-year-old son, I mean, their whole lives and friends and everything is in Boulder. You know, how did you sell that? What was it, just too bad we're going? Or did you and your husband actually have to sell that to them?
Excellent, excellent question. I think in the beginning, they were excited, but that lasted for like a nanosecond.
Right.
My son was a little, you know, he really did not know what to expect, but my 13-year-old daughter, man, she took it hard. It was not easy. She was crying. But an interesting thing happened when we finally got there. And don't forget, it was only for 1 year. We rented our house and we actually intended to go for 1 year. We didn't dupe them.
Right.
So, but the interesting thing that happened was in Israel, a lot of young kids under 10, they don't speak English yet. So my son really had to communicate in, you know, through sports and other things. And kids were flocking to him. My daughter, even more so. By the second day of school, she had a posse of kids waiting downstairs in the lobby of our building.
They were the exotic newbies. Right?
Yes. They were like, can I take my picture with you? Like, wow. They all wanted. So she felt like a rock star. That didn't last. Right. There was a lot of hard times there. But in the end, my kids are basically fluent in Hebrew and it's really our second home. So, it was a tricky time, no doubt.
And so obviously the kids are a big issue. How did you and your husband navigate your careers and your lives too? Because you mentioned, you know, right, having that toughness, that resiliency to literally pick up what all seems like an amazing life in Boulder, Colorado. I mean, there's bills that have to be paid. There's careers, right? This is pre-COVID. So the world wasn't so socially accepted to maybe work in remote locations or do certain things. So how did you guys navigate that?
We both work for ourselves. We're both entrepreneurs. We both are able and we're very fortunate and we worked hard, but we have a lot of luck in this too, to set our journey, set our travel plans. The downside of it for my husband in particular was most of his work was in the States. So he would travel back for 2-3 weeks at a time, like every 6 weeks. Okay. So it was difficult. We were up very, very late at night because it's a 7-hour time difference from New York City. So not easy. But again, if it's a small moment in time for 1 year and it's a big journey and a big adventure, you're up for it. We never said we're not coming back for 4 or 5 years. We said it's a year, 1 year. We can do anything for a year.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny when I graduated college, a lot of my friends moved to New York City or South Beach, and I never did. And I always thought it'd be great to live in the city for 1 year as a 20-something single person or in South Beach and never did. And here you guys are planning to move for just 1 year, which, as you know, right, in the grand scheme of things in an adult's life, 1 year is not much. Of course, it's a lot larger time frame to a 10-year-old or a 13-year-old. But then walk me through that process of when you and your husband started feeling as though, hey, wait a minute, we might want to extend this lease for a second year and then a third year. And then, whoa, maybe we want to make Aliyah.
Yeah. Well, it got kind of tricky. I mean, the first year we decided about 6 months and we can't go back after 1 year because we're just figuring out how to like order an ice cream. Like we're putting too much time in to understand how you get the mail. I mean, by the way, the mailman calls you and says, hey, I want to deliver a package. You going to be home? It's pretty cool, right? Yeah. Or we have a delivery guy deliver something. I'll be there between, you know, 9 and 4. And he shows up at 10 o'clock at night. It's a whole other world and a whole other culture. But kind of at the end of the day, we figured this is our shot to do something crazy. And we just figured it out. So 1 year clearly became two. Two became three. When we started entering the fourth year, then it became question of, you know, are we really going to stay? Because our kids would be serving in the Army. The IDF is a requirement triggered at age 16 based on where your parents reside. So it it became kind of a tricky thing. And in the end, my daughter ended up going to boarding school for the last bit of high school, and actually for all of high school. So she was only with us for a year and a half in Israel. And that's in the end really what brought us back to America. We didn't want our family to be on separate continents. But, you know, I think you set the course for your life and you make your choices, good, bad, or indifferent. Some days were tough. But overall, I encourage anybody who has any kind of shot to take life and do something a bit different, just to go for it.
You only get one life, right? So why not? Now, with you and your husband both being entrepreneurs, you know, I've learned through the years that entrepreneurship at times can be very lonely. It's you and your thoughts. It's sure you have people you associate with, business deals and different things, but you know, for a lot of people, entrepreneurship can be lonely. So as you moved, you know, to Israel, how did just the social aspect of you and your husband, you know, how did you make friends, meet friends? What did you folks do, you know, for entertainment, right? And get acclimated to the different cultures?
The most surprising difference between living in America versus living in Tel Aviv, Israel, for me personally, was how open and interested people were. It's really a melting pot there, in particular in Tel Aviv. South Africa, all over Europe, people are from everywhere in the world. And because of that international aspect, it's extremely dynamic and extremely welcoming. Very last minute plans are, Israelis are notorious for making plans at the very last minute.
Quick story.
My son was being bar mitzvahed. We decided we're living in Israel. We're going to do it in Israel. And like 6 months in advance, I sent a hold the date. A friend of mine, an Israeli friend of mine, called me and she said, "What are you? What? Why are you sending this 6 months?" I said, "Well, people from America, you know, they need information." She said, "We do this with 2 weeks' notice. This is crazy. This is crazy." So, anyhow, it's a very different environment. We had no problem making friends. We had so many friends. When we left, we had people coming in and out all hours of the day and the evening, coming to say goodbye to us. And we go back, we're trying to go back every 3 months. We feel like it's home, and it's still right. Home. So I think that we got very lucky in picking a culture. We're Jewish, and that's another sort of aligning element. Because we all celebrated Shabbat. We'd have people come for Shabbat dinner. Not that we're ultra religious, but it's a social thing. It's a cultural, right. Social thing. And it's a very lovely way to meet people.
Right. And you know, at least Judaism in the States, for me, has always been a mix of religious, social, cultural, kind of everything in one. And we always have that debate, you know, is being Jewish more a culture or a religion or both or separate, right? So I completely understand. And exactly that's, you know, so Shabbat dinner was one of your big social gatherings where you would meet, you know, have friends over or go to friends' houses and really assimilate into the culture.
Yeah. And it was very easy to do. It was shockingly easy, like surprisingly easy. My kids were, one time our first year, we decided to have a Halloween party inside of our apartment. And we let all the kids know in his class, and all the kids came and all their parents, because they'd all heard of Halloween, but they didn't know what it was. We hid behind bedroom doors and kids would open the door. They'd say trick or treat, and we'd give them candy. And parents stayed till about 1 o'clock in the morning. They were so interested in American life and American culture and what is this Halloween? And from there, we made lots of introductions. It was actually, in my opinion, much easier in Israel to make friends than it is in America.
Wow. I'm sure this is going to be something that's going to last probably generations deep for your family, for the lessons that your children learned by being there. And if they want to go back, and their children and their children's children. So, I mean, that's just amazing. What would you say would be the singular biggest challenge of living abroad?
The hardest part for us was the bureaucracy. Socialized medicine in Israel sounds great. Americans think, oh, it's amazing. Well, you may get good care, but you're not going to get great access. Or you may get great access, but it's not that good. So, for example, my husband needed an x-ray. Well, there's only 20 x-ray machines in the entire country, which is the size of New Jersey, as you know. So what time was his slot? It was 3 a.m. He had to drive 2 hours to get an x-ray in his slot, which is 3 a.m.
I can't believe there's only 20 in the entire country. How is that possible?
Again, socialized medicine. You know, I mean, the IDF, I'm sure, has private reserves of medical equipment, but there's, they call it Kupat Holim. They call it socialized medicine. And there's just like four you can pick from. And that's the way it goes. You know, that's the way it goes. Amazing healthcare there, by the way, but access, very tricky.
Just it's on their terms, not your terms.
Correct.
And there's nothing you can do about it, right? There's no extra premiums you can pay, or it's nope. Just, it is what it is, right? Take a number and wait.
Go with the flow. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that's really fair. You have to relearn how to live. It's a very, very unique experience to be American and go to a foreign country that where everything is different.
And did you live in Israel during COVID?
Yes, we were there. Israel, as you, I'm sure, remember, was the first country to get the vaccine in the world. Right. All eyes were on Israel because Pfizer made a deal to, in exchange for free vaccinations for the entire country, they grabbed all of the data from those four Kupat Holim, those four socialized medicine groups. So they had thousands and millions of data points based on buying this or exchanging this with Israel. So Israel, in turn, got their entire country vaccinated. And yeah, we were inside. There were drones flying overhead. We could only go 100 meters from our apartment in the very beginning of the days. Very serious. They had the police out. I remember we lived across the street from the beach in Tel Aviv. I remember seeing a surfer, one surfer, on his surfboard. And there were about 16 IDF forces out there, or police, getting this guy out of the water by himself. I mean, it was insane.
Right.
The world was insane then. I mean, we remember that.
Well, and so Florida was notorious for opening up very quickly, right? And I think at the time it was controversial. I think looking back, it was the right move. But other states, especially the northern states in the U.S., New York, you know, Washington, a lot of those states took months and months and months to reopen, and their economies hurt, their people were hurting. So how was it like in Tel Aviv? You know, when did they start lifting restrictions and, you know, and just the country, right? Was it, I mean, did they wait until the vaccine, or was it just a few months? Because Florida was really 2-3 months and we were not back to normal, but we were open.
Yeah. It's an excellent question. And the truth is, March of 2020, my husband went back to the States. He got my daughter. I could see something bad was coming down. And the country sealed shut. No one was allowed in or out of Israel. The airport was essentially closed. It's just kind of scary, you know, to be in a place where you're thinking, can I get out if I need to? But where were we going to go? Everything was a crazy mess. Israel was like that for about 4 or 5 months. And then in true Israeli fashion, people said, the hell, we'll figure it out. We're going to go. We're going to live our life.
Right.
So the answer to your question is, in the beginning, super concentrated. Everybody was locked down. But after a few months, you can't hold people back and you can't hold Israelis back either. Right. And thank goodness for that. And I'll tell you, that was in March. And in December, we were already traveling. We were in Dubai. My friends in America were, why would you go to that? So dangerous. We were traveling. We were going. We traveled many places, even during Corona. It didn't stop us. Only the first few months.
Yeah. And I was going to say, if there's any country that said, hey, this is not going to stop us or define us, it'd be Israel and our Israeli friends, because they're definitely a tough, resilient bunch. So that's great to hear. And, you know, and I'm sure that's why they are, you know, still and always will be one of the global leaders, just, you know, in tech and economy and just in everything. So Jennifer, this was great to hear about, you know, the big move. What I want to do is we're going to take a very quick, brief break from our sponsor, which is the Rossen Law Firm. And we're going to come back and I want to talk all about your big decision to start your own ad agency. And I want to talk about the pod as well. So we'll be right back when we hear a word from our sponsor.
When something bad happens, who do you turn to? In South Florida, the answer is the Rawson Law Firm. Criminal and DUI defense for when bad things happen to good people. The Rawson Law Firm is a team of 8 criminal defense attorneys, including 2 board-certified criminal trial experts. They also have federal and white-collar divisions in the practice. To learn more about the team and how they can help you, connect on Facebook and Instagram at Rawson Law Firm. You'll also find helpful and entertaining videos on Rawson Law Firm YouTube channel. Just check this episode's description for all the ways you can connect.
All right, and we are back from commercial break. Here we are on the Success in South Florida podcast. I'm your host, Adam Rawson, and we have a great conversation today with Jennifer Weissman. And so, Jennifer, I want to let's pivot and talk about your career starting an ad agency. What, you know, how old were you, and walk us through that process, because that's a pretty scary thing.
Well, I was living in New York City working for Madison Avenue advertising agencies. I was with like 3 or 4 of them. I would get a new gig, move down the street, you know, started at 42nd, ended up downtown at 28th. At the end of the day, I decided that there was a great opportunity for me to go out and do my own thing with this particular niche of advertising, which is called medical education, where we support pharmaceutical agencies, pharmaceutical companies, and their drugs, educating doctors about the science behind those drugs. So at 29, maybe I was 30, I decided, you know, what the hell, I'm going to go hang out a sign and give it a whirl. And within a year, I had most of my employees, my staff from my previous ad agency working for me, and it grew very fast. So we were in New York, and then we had an office opened in Denver, Colorado, and it was a great ride. It was a great run, a lot of fun, lots of highs and lows, making payroll, all those stresses that go along with, you know, starting a company and how are you going to make ends meet? You don't know, you know, payroll, everything that goes into it.
So at that time, you know, 29, 30 years old, were you married?
No, I was not married.
Okay. So not married and no, I'm assuming no children.
Right. Okay. Right. I had nothing to lose, really.
Right. So you're young, you're single, and really nothing to lose except for the big, stable, comfy job with the nice salary. I'm assuming nice apartment, right? You've went to school, you worked your butt off, grades, got the, you know, working, you know, Madison Avenue, right? The pinnacle of the ad agency and being that young executive. And so walk us through that process, though. Was there fear involved? How did you conquer it? And what was some of the advice that you got on both sides? Did you get anybody to say no, stay, or yes, you got to do it, you got to take that jump?
So I was on to do it because I was freaking out. Right. And he said to me, just jump. Those were his 2 words, just jump. I said, well, so should I take that as a yes? You know,
and right.
He's like, yes, just jump. You got to go. You got to do it. When you're that young and you have no dependents, I felt I had no reason not to. Having said that, I had interviewed and I had a job in my back pocket. So I gave myself, you know, I think it was 4 or 5 months. And I figured if I hadn't made it by then, I could always get a job. There was really no downside.
Did you have any friends or family that really pushed back or maybe projected some of their own thoughts or fears or regrets onto you and say, oh no, you're going to fail. Don't do it. It's too scary.
Luckily, I can't say that I had that. I did have a lot of strange looks. My parents were pretty supportive, but I just bought an apartment a few months earlier. So I think there was a little fear on my parents' end that maybe I can't make ends meet or whatever. I had a few strange looks from friends, but I was dating a guy who was involved in an organization called YEO, which is Young Entrepreneurs Organization. It's kind of the predecessor to EO, which I know you're involved with.
Right. Yes.
And YEO was very similar to Young Presidents Organization or YPO, but you had to be under 40. And anyhow, long story short, this guy I was dating was involved, and he was a great sounding board for me. And I eventually got into YEO pretty shortly after I started my ad agency. And that really helped me. I mean, I had already made those decisions, but it helped me have a sounding board of peers who were also struggling or growing companies. And I think that was really pivotal in keeping me grounded and letting me feel like I had a sounding board of like a private board of directors who could help counsel me when I needed it.
Right. That peer group, especially for entrepreneurs, where again, where the journey can be very lonely at times, is invaluable. And I've only been a member of EO for about a year and I love it. It is such a great organization. I'm so lucky to, to be in the group. And it's funny because when I was applying, you know, especially now EO in Miami being the third largest chapter in the world, they really want entrepreneurs and not just successful technicians or service-based professionals like doctors and lawyers and accountants. And I had to really tell them, no, guys, I swear, I don't have any cases anymore in my criminal defense firm. I'm not going to court every day. Yes, I'm a lawyer by trade, but I don't really consider myself a lawyer anymore. And we have big plans for the firm and I'm doing day-to-day more CEO and marketing activity. So please take me, right? And they did, luckily. And I've loved it. I'm so fortunate to be in the group.
And so you're finding a lot of value in it, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. I'm in a forum. It's great. I'm going to the events. I'm meeting new people. And that's the thing is I don't go to bar event functions because I found it when I did go, it was lawyers commiserating about just how terrible the profession is or how miserable they are. And I'm a positive person and I don't want to be around that. So I don't go to those anymore. I haven't in years. I do go to a lot of lawyer business or lawyer entrepreneur events and groups. There's a lot of conferences now that really focus on that. And I have a great group of friends throughout the country that are in those groups. But I wanted something a little different to supplement those. You know, I wanted to be around tech investors. I wanted to be around real estate investors and just people who have built it and lost it three times over and can say, Adam, what you're going through is not so scary. I've been, I've been rich and poor three, four times in my life. It's okay. And really have that again, that private board of directors to get the experience that I just don't have from a true business and entrepreneur perspective. So it's been fantastic.
Well, just as a short, sound point here, my husband and I met through YEO. He was a member in Colorado. I was a member in New York City, and they have these retreats, these university weekends. And we met in 1999 in San Diego at the Hotel Del Coronado. And then we got engaged at the university in Hong Kong in, I guess it was 2001. Yeah. So there is some take-home value outside of your peer group, just saying.
Right. Yeah. Well, they should have you guys on the website as a love story, success story.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. That's really cool. Now, and so going back to this, decision to jump, I'll tell you, it's a little similar to myself. So I was a prosecutor for a year and a half. And before a year and a half. So maybe after about a year, my roommate and I, we were both prosecutors and we had decided to leave and start our own firm. And I was 26 years old and all of my friends who were prosecutors thought we were crazy. It was the worst decision ever. And looking back, we were too stupid to fail. We had a plan. The plan was horrible, but we had a plan. And having, I don't know if I would have done it by myself. So having my really good friend, my roommate to hold hands and jump off the cliff with together was great. But at 26, I, wasn't married, no children. The only bills I had were just whatever a normal 26-year-old does, plus the mountain of student loans that were already in deferment because I couldn't pay them on my prosecutor's salary. So I was just, whatever. And we pretty much said, look, we're going to give it 6 to 12 months. All we need to do is make our prosecutor's salary. That's it. Because at least we know we can live off of that.
Yeah,
of course, right. We want to do better. And luckily we did. And we actually made money from day one in our firm. But we kept expenses low. We worked in our apartment. We had that virtual office before it was a thing. Now we weren't on Zoom or anything like that. But,
sure.
And this was 2008. And if we failed, our plan was either A, come crawling back to the prosecutor's office, or B, just do document review for a few months until we got a real job. Right. And luckily we never, and even it was, if we were struggling to make money in the first few months, we could take, you know, do 10, 20 hours of document review a week just to supplement so we can live. We never needed that. We stumbled into a bunch of other things that were successful, that were unplanned, but successful. And I learned really from that moment on about the law of attraction, of just what you put out in the world finds a way to come back to you. And again, the plan was terrible, but we executed on new opportunities. And we were together for 7 years. It was a great partnership. And we split, we're still really good friends. And we split in 2015. And that's when I got refocused and really built the Rossin Law Firm into what it is today, which is pretty successful. And we have, you know, significant plans for growth. But I don't know if I would have made that decision at 35 or 40. You know, I just don't know. And I told my friends after about a year or two, I said, guys, like, this was the perfect time for us. We didn't need 10 years of experience in government or in the law.
Sometimes when you overthink things, you're so immobilized by the options of fear. This could happen and that could happen. And it sounds so similar to my story, is that I really had nothing to lose. I had a job in my back pocket. And I'll tell you this, an amazing, amazing entrepreneur, a hero of mine, passed away last Thursday, Sam Zell. And one of the many things that Sam talked about was his number one focus was analyzing the downside of risk, right? If you look at the worst case scenario and you can live with that, there's no reason not to go for it.
Right. And those are great words of wisdom. So what I've learned is that lawyers, maybe this is the reason that I don't like hanging out with lawyers generally, but lawyers are too risk averse. And so for any lawyers or people who are listening to this who want to go to law school, right, I think the profession of being a lawyer is amazing. And you know, if you want to do it, you should definitely do it, because we, by our nature, we help people. But lawyers will find 10 million ways to tell you no, right? And what they don't do is tell you how to get to yes. And so when we went through some exercises, you know, Jennifer, I don't know if you know Cesar Quintero from EO. So he's our EOS coach, and he's the one who got me into EO and really told me about it. But when we went through our journey with Cesar and coming up with the firm's core values, I was insistent that get to yes had to be one of the firm's core values. And we've built a culture where, you know, no is an opportunity for yes. Don't tell me the 10 different ways that it's not going to work. Tell me why, how and why we can get it done. You know, if there's a wall, we jump over it. We take a shotgun and we blow it up. We dig a hole underneath. We walk around it. We, you know, we figure out a way, whatever that way is. Of course, legally, ethically, professionally, but get to yes. And that's been one of the big things in my life that's become personal and professional and a big part of me. And the other thing I started realizing actually in 2015, when my partner and I split and it was my old partner's decision, I went through a lot of that reframing and a lot of the thoughts back to 2008 when we left together, except this time it was all on myself. And I listened to a podcast and they talked about fear, and the acronym for fear being false events appearing real. And even to this day now, a firm of 20 people and 8 attorneys in our firm, whenever there's a decision to be made, I'm always telling myself, trust my knowledge, trust the process, and fear is just false events appearing real. And what's the worst?
I love that. Right. I love that. That's great.
And what's the downside, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to be around a group of entrepreneurs who have failed and lost it and rebuilt. Because sometimes I've also noticed, just with, you know, when you have highly intelligent technicians, especially service-based technicians who went to years and years of schooling, there is that fear of failure. People cannot handle trying hard and it not being good enough, when generally those type of people have always succeeded. And when they put their mind to it, they get A's. There is no such thing as a B when you try hard in school. And being able to look yourself in the eye and saying, yes, I failed, but what am I going to do about it? How am I going to fix it or pick myself up?
This is exactly where my podcast, Going for Greatness, comes in. This is the ideal placeholder for it, because it's about, when I look at people, you're describing, you know, the fear factor keeping. It's about significant life events, right? Good, bad, terrible, horrible, and how to climb your way back. And I always found, as an entrepreneur myself, but also seeing other people, like, how do they do that? Like, how does someone who, you know, was told they'd never walk again and didn't know how to climb, climb to the summit of Mount Everest? Like, this is crazy. This is inspirational. And so I'm just sort of thinking about, like, what you're talking about, Adam, and it's really interesting how one can decide to adapt and recreate a new conversation and pursue greatness, really.
And so let's talk about your podcast, right? This is a great segue into it. But how did you come up with the idea and even get started?
It was in the middle of Corona. I told you that the first few months, it was a hardcore, solid lockdown, like hermetically sealed. We weren't going anywhere. And in the beginning, it was kind of fun. My kids were home. My dog, everybody was home. It was great. But as
about 2 weeks.
You know, yeah.
two weeks until everybody wanted to rip each other's heads off.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, I don't know if you saw this meme, but this is just a bit of a side note, but there was this guy and he was interviewed and he said, I have two options for you. A, you would be with your family for the next 6 months alone, just your family, or B, and before the person could say what B was, he said, B,
yes.
B.
Yes. Yeah. I remember that very well. And I showed my wife and we both had a great laugh.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Anyhow, in the context of B, I thought, God, I really need to keep some inspiration and look at options of how life is so good, because right now it's looking kind of sucky. And I'm reading a lot. I have a bias towards Israeli stories, and there just seemed to be a plethora of amazing, incredible entrepreneurs coming out of Israel. And I started reading the local paper and hearing a story about this woman who, as I said, Danielle, was told she'd never walk again. She had a skiing accident, and she said in her ICU bed, I'll show these doctors, I'm going to climb Mount Everest. And she did. Or the woman who lost both feet to malaria, freak thing. And she has gone on, she started a company, she's a CEO, she has no feet. And you see her on TED Talks, you see her all over the world. So her story is incredible. Or the blind photographer who has won award after award after. Like, how can you be blind and be a photographer? Explain this to me. Like, I don't get it. Or the entrepreneur who was an opioid addict and went to jail, you know, 40 years to life and got himself out and started a company called LivesIn, which is one of the leading makers of high-end outdoor clothing, rivaling North Face and others, or the hostage negotiator out of the Middle East, or the guy who started Surfing for Peace, or Tova, dear sweet Tova, who was a Holocaust survivor and wrote a bestseller called The Daughter of Auschwitz, which everyone should read. I mean, the people that I've met through this Going for Greatness podcast is just beyond extraordinary. People are unbelievably inspiring.
And so what are the consistent themes among these people who have achieved, you know, just measurable, amazing things in their lifetime against all odds?
Number one is grit. Number one was undoubtedly grit. There's a stick-to-itiveness, a will to survive, a will to achieve. Sometimes it seems like a will to prove other people wrong, which I can kind of identify with.
Me too.
Yeah. I kind of, there's something weird about that, but it's like, oh, really? You don't think I can do it? It's like this challenge. It's before you. It's like, hell yeah, I'm going to do it.
I always tell people, I say, if it's something I care about and you know, if I actually care about it, right? And you tell me no, you're going to be in for a big surprise. And I don't care what it is, I will prove you wrong.
Yeah.
And that's just, I don't know. It's just been in me since my entire life.
I am in your camp. I am the same, cut from the same cloth there, Adam. I definitely feel the same way. That's what I've noticed. We've got about 32, soon to be 33 episodes, and the people are inspiring, amazing, really and truly, you know, incredible. There was one woman who wanted to stop domestic violence, and she took artificial intelligence, which you and I had a conversation about, and she, through AI, she brought these women back to life with their images and dubbed their sound, and she had them tell the story of the signs that they missed from their lovers about how they were eventually going to be violent and how they were killed. And it was a public service announcement, and it went viral. It was all over Israel, Europe. It was a huge deal. And she's just so beyond inspiring, really incredible what people have done. Startup apps, safe up apps. There's a guy, and actually he's in Florida, called Clean the World. And he discovered, he's like, wow, what do they do with all those little bars of soap that I've used once in the hotel? And then he read about all these kids dying of dysentery in third world countries. And he said, we're throwing out soap here, and these kids have no soap. So this amazing entrepreneur founded Clean the World, where he takes 8,000 hotels worldwide, grabs their soap used, cleans it, and moves the new soap to third world countries. Like, does that not blow your mind?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, right?
And yep,
it just goes to show that you can have innovation and help the world at the same time and help others. So for these, you know, 30 something people you've interviewed, and they're so focused on a lot of times a singular goal, have you found, you know, for them, is it the journey or is it the destination? Because that's something that I've always struggled with myself. And even when I was a high school basketball coach, we had a very good team. We ended up winning a state championship, but we had these big lofty goals, but we sometimes struggled with, yes, we want the destination, but what about that journey to get there? Do you embrace it? Do you deal with the everyday? Because sometimes parts of the journey might not be good. And, you know, so what have you seen between these inspiring people with regarding that? You know, is it the journey? Is it the destination? A hybrid of both?
That's a great question. And I'm trying to think, you know, think about the people that I've met. There's a willingness to put themselves out there, and that seems like a driving force. For example, there's a man in the Ukraine who's a CEO. And right when the war started in Ukraine last February, he sent all of his like 1,000 employees to Poland. And he was like, here I am with this giant campus, and there are all these people that need to take a shower. And he sent out a WhatsApp and said, hey, anybody need a shower? Anyhow, this man by himself saved thousands of lives by himself. And
incredible.
I mentioned this because I'm trying to answer your question. And I think in that moment, most of these people, the common denominator is really they're innovators, and they see an opportunity to either advance themselves beyond recognition or help someone else. Between that and you weave in this sense of grit and hell yes attitude, I just feel like they're really in a special category.
I can definitely see that, right? Because you have this destination, but things come up along the journey. And then, you know, the innovation, right? Innovation and grit. I think those are, for really entrepreneurs, those are two of the big keys. So, okay, I have a few more questions for you that I like to ask everybody. And I'm going to ask this first for you, and then for what you've seen through the amazing people that you've interviewed. Do you love to win or do you hate to lose?
That's a great question.
And we've had great answers to this.
I my instinct is to say that I really hate to lose. That's my feeling is, God, if I just lost this, how did I miss that? You know, it's more of an evaluation, a self-evaluation of like, how did I miss the mark? How did I miss that? So my answer is going to be, I hate to lose.
Okay. And have you seen any consistency among the people that you interview, or what do you think they would say?
Great question. I think they love to win. I think they love to win. I'm reminded of a man who was a champion triathlete and was winning all kinds of awards all over the world. And who was suddenly hit by a car while he was training, and he's climbing his way back because he's going to win. He's going to podium again. And I think that there is something to this. I would like to say that the world's fastest blind Ironman is someone that I interviewed. And when I think about his story, where an IED blew up and he lost his sight, and he went on to become the world's fastest blind Ironman. He swims 2.5 miles. He runs a full marathon, and he rides 100 and whatever miles on his bike. And he does it all blind.
Blind.
And he trains. And I mean, it's just like, I mean, he is completely blind. So this guy's going to win. I mean, he's already a winner, but this guy's going to win. So my answer for the people that I've interviewed is they want to win.
Yeah. I mean, that's great insight and analysis. I really like hearing that. So last question, right? What anybody listening to this, whether they're young and just getting started with life, or whether whatever they are, wherever somebody is, what advice do you have for them in order to be more successful, or to make a change in their life, or just be better, right, or be happier with whatever's going on? So yeah, what advice do you have, for people?
I have a saying that my daughter and I share all the time. We go back and forth on it, and it's be afraid, but do it anyway. And okay, that's kind of how my husband and I, that's the guardrail that we set in our family. You can be afraid. It's human to be afraid. It makes sense to be nervous, but don't let it stop you, because you live a much smaller life. And, I'm in my 50s now. I know people that have died much younger, and it goes real fast. And when you see your kids growing up and graduating from high school, gosh, it goes really fast. It would be so much a shame if I had said, no, we're not going to move to Tel Aviv. We're going to stay in Boulder. We're going to keep our life as we know it. We're happy. Our kids are good. I think we would have missed out on so much adventure, opportunity, and living. And if I extrapolate that and move that forward, I would say, I'm just going to keep going and keep challenging myself. And so I would say to people, never, ever say no. Be afraid, but do it anyway.
I think those are extremely inspiring words. I could not agree more. And anybody listening to this, I mean, Jennifer, I think you and your story is an inspiration to people, probably not nearly as much as you think that this, your story is an inspiration to others, because it is. And that, I'm sure your children are going to be doing amazing things as well. So kudos to you. And absolutely, right? I mean, all too often people are living their lives too small and not thinking big enough, or not taking that chance, or living in the status quo. And one of the things that I always like for personally myself and the firm to do is challenge the status quo. We want to be disruptors. We want to change,
And we're talking about personal disruption. I mean, yes, entrepreneurs, they disrupt in a macro way, but if you live in the same house that you grew up in, or in the same neighborhood, and you have a lot of the same friends, and you're happy, I'm sure it's a great life, but you don't know what you don't know. And when you break out and do something that feels really scary, I guarantee you, even if it's a mistake, it's going to be a home run. Thank you so much for your very kind words. And I'm very humbled to speak to these amazing people on my podcast with Going for Greatness, because, boy, these people are great. And your podcast is also amazing. I really enjoy listening to it.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, how can people find you? Anybody wants to stay in touch or look out?
Oh, I hope so. Apple, Spotify, we're on a pod page. We've got a Substack. Pretty much just type in Google Going for Greatness, and it's a pink logo.
Extra
and it
pink.
Says Going for Greatness. And right. Why not go for greatness, Adam? Why not go for greatness?
Well, I think that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah.
It's pushing yourself. It's nobody wants to go for mediocrity. And, being mediocre in my family and in the law firm is a bad word, right? Average is a bad word. Average is a C. Who wants to be average? Why? And whatever, you can be different and weird and quirky or whatever. Just be yourself, be different, and go for greatness. Why not?
Yeah, right? Why not?
Why not? I think it's actually harder to be average or to be mediocre and just stay in your lane. Go for it, right? We only have one life to live, and you might as well live it. So
I agree.
That's amazing. I hope everybody listening to this, I hope that they find you, they listen to your podcast, and they reach out. I mean, I would encourage anybody, if you know anybody who has a great story to tell, then reach out to Jennifer, because I know you're always looking for great guests to have.
I would love that. If you know someone that just rocks your world with their story, pass it along. Pass it to you. Pass it to me. Go on the podcast and on the contact list. I would love to hear about amazingly great people who are doing inspiring things. Thank you so much, Adam. This was great.
Oh, thanks for being here too. You know, absolutely. You, this was so much fun. So, all right, that's going to be a wrap for today. Adam Rawson and Jennifer Weissman signing out from the Success in South Florida podcast. We'll see you on the next one.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.